You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join us Friday at noon to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Getting into the weeds here on today's episode of Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I am your host, Brendan Kleen. I cover the Suns and the NBA at SB Nation and Dime Magazine. And you can follow me on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Most importantly, you can follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns, where you can tell me which of the top three teams in the West the Suns match up best with, because that is the topic of today's show. Mike Prada, one of my favorite writers and reporters on the NBA for quite a long time, back when he was at SB Nation. He's done the Limited Upside podcast for several years, has a newsletter now, and is writing a book. A guy who gets very, very deep on the NBA, on how just basketball works. You'll hear him in a minute get into the mechanics of the Suns' defensive rotations, the differences between Devin Booker and Bradley Beal as scorers and what that could mean for the playoffs, how the Clippers are actually potentially a good matchup for the Suns. So a great conversation with Mike. It actually started with a tweet. Mike tweeted a while ago how exciting the matchup between the Suns and Clippers would be, and after the last time that they played, and I asked him to come on the show to talk to me about it, and then we ended up adding the Lakers and the Jazz in there as well. So that's what this show is. We're going to go team by team through the top three teams in the Western Conference and how the Suns match up with each one. Really, that leads us to a whole smorgasbord of conversation topics surrounding this team as the Suns head into the postseason. So without further ado, enjoy the conversation. One of my favorite episodes of the whole season, guys, no joke. Here is Mike Prada. You know him from the Limited Upside podcast, from SB Nation, from Twitter. He's one of my favorite NBA writers. His name is Mike Prada. He's here to talk with us about the Suns playoff matchups, what's upcoming here as the Suns ready themselves for the postseason. We're going to talk through the three top teams in the Western Conference and kind of the X's and O's, nuts and bolts of how the Suns match up. We've seen the Suns get to test themselves against these three teams recently. We're coming off of a game against the Warriors, Mike, where Steph Curry really just handed it to the Suns in terms of bending their defense to the breaking point. So I'm curious, let's get your thoughts on this Suns team to start things off, and then we'll dive into the Lakers here in a second. But what have you made of this new look Suns team and the success they've had this year?
Hey, yeah, fun game last night for all non-Suns fans. That was terrific. I love that game. Look, I enjoy watching the Suns play. I've really enjoyed watching this team. I really like the way. I mean, there's some things they do. I know their defense has slipped over the past month or so, and I know some Suns fans are concerned, and I don't know exactly how concerned they should be. You know, sometimes end of season stuff, I mean, things get screwed up. But one of the things I just love about this team is that they play very physically in a way that is new age. They play very physically with their chests and their hips on both ends. They're really good at stopping dribble penetration at the point of attack. I think their point of attack defense is absolutely terrific and a model, frankly, for how the rest of the league should be playing. And on offense, I think you look at Booker in particular, you know, he's such a physical downhill attacker, such a decisive player like that. And Chris Paul, his physicality is renowned. And so I just think it's really interesting the way that they've built a team that, in an era where physicality is supposedly impossible because of the rules, the Suns have found a way to be successful while also being super physical in a way that is not like kind of using their hands and not like kind of putting people on the deck. You know, it's they're a team that really grinds it out in a very specific new age way. And I think regardless of how good they actually are, I think that's kind of an interesting thing that other teams may want to look at.
I actually think that's a good way to talk about the Lakers, because that's the team I wanted to start with here. It's the team we've seen most recently play the Suns and potentially one of the more likely first-round matchups the Suns might face, a series that no Suns fan wants to deal with, but we have to start talking about it. And that was a trademark of the Lakers last year, was the way that they, you know, similarly played physical and had different looks, that they didn't have to sacrifice that physicality and that defensive level by downsizing because of Anthony Davis, by, you know, having smaller guards and wings out there. They just were able to make it work in so many different ways, depending on who they were playing. How does their sort of brand of physicality, do you think, differ from what the Suns do? And how do you think the Suns kind of match up with the way that the Lakers play?
Not very well.
We're starting on a down note, unfortunately.
Not very well. Yeah, I mean, I actually think, and this may sound like an odd comparison at first, but I think what happened to the Lakers in the playoffs against Houston last year, in a lot of ways, at least on offense and to a lesser degree on defense, when the Lakers were on offense and defense, is a really good illustration of what might happen in this series if they played. The Rockets, particularly after they went small, but even before then, you'll recall Steve Kerr, the Warriors coach, often describing them as a bunch of middle linebackers defensively, where they're not tall, but they're very stout and they really dig into you. And they're kind of got that like sort of short, mobile kind of, they're almost like five Draymond Green S type of players. And in a weird way, if you try to post them up, you're just going to kind of be stuck and rooted in place. And how it's almost counterintuitively, you need to spread a team like that out rather than to post them up. Now, that made sense for the Warriors. But the problem, and the Suns are, first of all, the Suns are very much built the same way. I mean, Chris Paul was on the Rockets. You look at all the sort of 6'5" to 6'8", like sort of wide bodies they have, Jay Crowder, Torrey Craig, Saric, who's bizarre. You may be able to explain to me why Saric has lost his rotation spot. I don't really understand that. Even Chris Paul. I mean, Booker is, again, has become more physical. Cam Johnson. It just seems like they have an entire team of these types of guys. The problem that Houston ran into is that the Lakers have a team of those guys too, except they're bigger, particularly Anthony Davis. And so to your point about their ability to shapeshift and still be physical and play with size, no matter whether they're playing Davis at the four or five. In the Houston series, obviously Davis played the five, but in the
kind Suns, of also played the one defending Russ.
Right. Yeah. The positions are sort of, I mean, positional versatility is sort of an interesting topic in and of itself, but I think the larger point is that Davis is able to play that way. And other Lakers are too. I think their guards are really physical in a way that is underappreciated. You know, the Carusos, the Caldwell Popes, the Talen Horton Tuckers. I think that gives the Suns guards problems in a way. They can't really just outgrind or out-physical them. And you certainly can't outgrind or out-physical AD. And so it's almost like you're drawing your best, your strategy, your identity is drawing dead against that team.
Sure.
Yeah, to use a poker term. And you saw it with the way AD dominated that game on both ends. And I think you also saw it in some of the struggles. I mean, the only time the Suns really made that game interesting was when they played Campaign. And he was able to sort of zip around them and zip through them and kind of play in space more. And particularly when Campaign played with Chris Paul, which I thought was an interesting look. But that's not how the Suns win games. The Suns win games by out-grinding you, by beating you up at the point of attack, by being a middle linebacker. And if you can't do that against the team because they're too big, like that's a real challenge. You're drawing dead. The Suns, I think, would be much better off against a team that plays in space that they can take away.
Well, I think in a lot of ways too, the fact that they were able to play that Payne, Booker, Paul trio, and we've seen that more over the past month or so from the Suns and from Monty Williams. But against the Lakers, the way that they were able to pull that off is because LeBron was out, right? If LeBron's in there, you need the Crowders and the Cam Johnsons to check him, and that prevents you from going to that super small look. So I think we're on the same page. You mentioned Caruso and KCP. Both of those guys had it going against the Suns, especially defensively, creating turnovers, playing Booker physically. I agree. I just think a lot of the advantages that the Suns can create with their pick and roll offense, with their the different things that they do defensively so well as a team that you highlighted at the beginning, a lot of that's just neutralized by the way that the Lakers role players operate and the fact that their stars are sort of unguardable. It's a tough nut to crack for any NBA team, but the Suns just don't really have the personnel to match up with that. I do want to ask you about DeAndre Ayton, Mike, but I think we actually can do that in the context of the next team we want to talk about, which is the Clippers. And we'll do that right after a quick break. Many of you, I'm sure, already looking into summer vacation, fall vacation, whatever it is, we've been cooped up for so long, and it's not as cheap as it used to be. What that means is a lot of us are going to have to get back to saving money because we're going to have to start spending money again. And the best time to do that, the best way to do that, is to fix things yourself. And there's no better option than your car. Rock Auto is who I'm here to tell you about today. And of course, they make things cheap and easy for you. That's the bottom line at Rock Auto. They are a family-owned business. They've been doing this for literally decades. Their website is easy to navigate, but again, best, most importantly, they save you money. They do not nickel and dime you based on what the market is showing them or whether you're a pro versus a do-it-yourselfer. You are going to want to save money this summer, and inevitably, in Arizona, things are going to go wrong with your car. I cannot recommend enough checking out Rock Auto, seeing the savings that you can participate in there, and consider it, guys. Put stuff on your car, fix things, and do it all by yourself with the help of Rock Auto. Again, prices at rockauto.com. Reliably low, the same for pros versus do-it-yourselfers. So go check them out right now. Just type your make and model in. Very easy, very simple. It'll take you to a landing page where you can scroll quickly through all of the different parts that Rock Auto has for that car or truck, and then click on what you need, buy it, no account necessary, and get it to your door in days. That's it. So go check it out, rockauto.com. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box when you make your purchase so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. Back here talking Suns matchups with Mike Prada, and we're on to the Clippers here. Potentially a second round matchup for the Suns, provided the Suns actually get out of this first round. And the Clippers have been an interesting one for me all season. And, you know, part of it is questions just about that team in general. What are they going to look like? They've changed a little bit since what we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. We don't know, you know, mentally and emotionally what they'll be come playoff time this year after the bubble letdown. But aside from all of that, just as a Suns matchup, Mike, they seem to be a team that's uniquely positioned to play DeAndre Ayton potentially off the floor. We saw that in the home matchup at the beginning of April. They downsized with Batum and Morris in the front court. Ayton did not close that game. Serge Ibaka hasn't even played lately, but he's obviously a guy who can do some of that by spacing the floor and doing some pick and pop stuff. So what do you make of DeAndre Ayton's role in the playoffs? Do you feel like what you've seen from him is that he can stay on the floor in a situation like that? Do you think the Suns have to keep him out there to be at their best? What do you think of him as a player come postseason time?
Yeah, I mean, I want to respond to that with a question. Like, is it so bad for the Suns if DeAndre Ayton is played off the floor?
Well, that gets us to the Šarić thing you mentioned, right? I think I'm more and more wondering. I felt like Šarić was going. So to go back to the Lakers for a second, the Suns played the Lakers right before the All-Star break. It's the game Booker got ejected. It was on national TV. A lot of folks were talking about that game. Mm-hmm. I think AD was out and only LeBron played in that game. Šarić closed that game.
Right.
And that was around the time I thought that he was going to start taking minutes from Ayton. I thought, you know, they're going to have this kind of accountability. It's getting to, you know, crunch time in the season where you need to start making some decisions about the rotation. You need to start, you know, putting into place that if Ayton can't execute these basic things, he's not going to play, et cetera. And it's really lost the thread because Šarić has just not been himself. He's really looked like the guy last season or in Minnesota who can't even stay in an NBA rotation. I really don't know what to make of it if it's not a physical thing. So I guess to put it more bluntly, like, they don't have another option unless you really think Torrey Craig can be a NBA 5-4, you know, 7 second round playoff games. And I just don't think that's really a recipe for success either. So I almost feel like they need Ayton.
Yeah. I mean, the Ayton Aiden's development this year, I think, has been kind of an interesting subplot. And it's interesting you say that the Clippers is a matchup where this most is illustrated. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I can see where you're going. Because, I mean, when I watched those, they played the Clippers now three times or four times.
Yep, three. And they lost two of them, I believe.
So they lost two of them. I watched at least two of those games. I definitely watched the time they beat them. I remember one of the games they lost was like on the second night of a back-to-back after the Utah game, right?
Yep.
And they lost that at the end. I thought they played quite well in that game.
That was a road game, yeah.
Yeah, I thought the Suns outplayed the Clippers in that game. They didn't win, but I thought the Suns played really well. The Clippers, I think that if, again, going back to our principle earlier on, if the argument is that the Suns would rather have a team that tries to play in space rather than a team that tries to beat the, that's just too big for them. Mm. The Clippers in theory then offer a pretty useful matchup because that's a team that does play with a lot of space. And one thing the Suns do really well is close space on perimeter rotations, yes, and with their physicality. So whether Aiden's in the game or not, I mean, I think the Aiton topic is kind of a more interesting, larger picture sort of question with the Suns. Mm-hmm. But whether he's in the game or not, I'm not sure that that game, that series will be decided by who plays the five when Marcus Morris plays the five. You know, because I do think Aiton can do a decent job stepping out enough against like the Marcus Morris of it. The way I put it is that I think that if the Suns are worried about that question, I think they're thinking about this the wrong way. It is a first world problem.
So how should they be thinking about it? What do you think would decide a series like that?
So the bigger question I'd have for that series is the Clippers switching on defense against the Suns offense. To me, that's a much bigger concern. Yep. So the Suns' biggest weakness, I think, is that while their offensive numbers during the regular season are good, they are very prone to stagnation. They were definitely prone to that in the Warriors game. It's very easy for, if the initial option does not work, for their offense to devolve. They have two guys who really control most of the offense and the outputs that are therein. So if you switch them, and if Phoenix is not doing a good job, as I don't think they were last night, and sort of decisively going from action to action, and they're trying to play, grind it down, and Booker's pulling it out, and Paul's doing his little dribble weave thing, and you play a team against like the Clippers that can switch, you run the risk of your offense completely bogging down with or without Aiden on the floor. And if their offense bogs down, that makes the other team get in transition, that spreads the Suns out even more. That takes away, frankly, Phoenix's transition game, which is underratedly kind of interesting because of Paul's ability to just kind of maximize every little advantage and kind of in transition.
And Bridges being an insane leak out guy out of nowhere this season, just developing that skill. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, the bigger concern with Ayton is not on the defensive end, but they've got to find a way for him to actually be involved on offense. And I can't help but think that they've perhaps gone about this the wrong way for Aiton, if not the bet, though it was probably the right way for their team with his development this year.
As in, you know, maybe spoon feeding him a little bit more if, you know,
for actually not. So okay. My provocative thought on Aiton is that I think he should be playing a lot more like Nick Vucevic plays for Chicago and Orlando, where he's making just all these one cut decisive moves in space. When he posts up, it's immediate, but he's also shooting trail threes, which I think is something that he should be doing more, playing more kind of on the move, using sort of his quickness wherever he is on the floor. I think the more you slow him down, the more his physicality issues, I think he struggles in that situation, get exposed. And so that's why the 2 points to me are related. If the ball is stopping so that the two guards can kind of be weaving and dribbling out, that also makes Ayton a much less effective player at punishing bigger lineups.
Yeah, I hear you there. The times, so I did a big, I remember doing a probably post-game show one of these days when they had this road trip where they played some crappy teams, but Ayton just really demolished. It was like early in April. They played the Rockets a couple times. They played the Kings one night. And there was a couple possessions in the Kings game where the Kings put Harrison Barnes on DeAndre Ayton, and he was able to actually in the clutch get a couple buckets to go down, similar to what you're talking about, decisive post offense where he's, you know, actually enforcing his advantages and things like that. But I think one of the issues of why it's not consistent there is he can't dribble. And so Vucevic at least has enough of a handle for a 7-footer where he can make those moves happen. I really think that's where Ayton, whether it's mental of processing the ball pressure and things like that, or the legitimate, you know, physical skill of being able to do that, that part of his game hasn't developed enough. But I do generally agree with the idea that when they're being blitzed, when teams are switching, we saw blitzing a lot from the Lakers and Warriors. We've seen teams like the Clippers, even the Nuggets was the first time that it popped on my radar when there was a 2-in-1 city game doubleheader thing with Denver at the end of January where they won both. And it was a lot because the Nuggets were switching defensively, which isn't even something that they always do, but they were doing it strategically and really making the Suns struggle. What I don't see happening in those situations is quick, sharp cuts, whether that's, you know, bailing on the screen really early and getting to the rim from Ayton, popping. Like you said, he rarely shoots threes. That was something we thought we would see more of this season's not really materialized. And they don't really cut. Like, that's one thing from the switch from Rubio to Paul that has really gone away. And obviously, it's fine to sacrifice that. Their offense has been better. But it's something that I think you could see make a difference in those moments where these guys are struggling with their one-on-one matchup, when teams are really just hammering Paul and hammering Booker and making life hard on them, forcing turnovers, things like that. But I wonder, one of the things I've kind of wondered if the Suns have in their back pocket is that Chris Paul just becomes way more effective as a scorer and as a pull-up three-point shooter that we kind of saw him do in Oklahoma City last year in similar situations against that Houston team, and it matters a little bit less. Do you feel like that can counter some of this stuff where the Suns can handle it better if Paul just turns that part of his game on a little bit?
It's interesting you say Paul, because I actually think that it's more Booker that needs to turn that game part of his game on. Mm-hmm. And I know that's part of that is capability wise. Like, I just don't think that Chris Paul, you can expect him to shoot 15 threes in a game.
Sure.
Or 10 threes in a game at this stage of his career. Like, that's not really, he needs so much to go right for him to shoot those threes.
But well, I hate Booker, to say it, but Booker doesn't, he's not a good pull-up three-point shooter. He never really has been that. So
it's interesting.
I don't
it's
know
interesting
what to do there.
It's interesting you say that, because, I mean, certainly Booker's three-point attempts since Monty Williams has come into town have gone down. He's no longer taking those types of shots. I think he's played a lot more closer to the basket, you know, in terms of where he's coming off these screens, where he's hopping into this stuff, where they're using him. And it makes sense on the aggregate because, you know, what people don't realize about Booker is that he is really, really strong and he is a very direct driver. So if he gets a step on you, he'll throw his body into you. That's a lot of chest and hips and to get through, and he'll draw those fouls. So given the physicality he plays with, it makes sense for him to be closer to the basket. At the same time, I think that he is often, when you say he's not a good pull-up shooter, I don't have his percentages in front of me. I know, but I think he's too reluctant as a pull-up shooter, and they're too reluctant to use him that way. The best, I think that it's more, he's more likely to be able to get those shots off than Chris Paul is, and to get them off quicker. And a quick Devin Booker 27 footer off the screen is much better for Phoenix if it's coming within the rhythm and the flow and that you've led to it, than for him to back it out, for him to be dribbling a lot, and for the offense to stagnate. So I actually think that, I mean, Paul is Paul. This is the guy he is. This is a game he plays. I don't think it's reasonable to expect him to become like a super fire guy on threes. I think obviously he will be more decisive on switches, but I think that's reflected more in how quickly he moves. Booker, on the other hand, to me, like that, I would like to see him shoot more of those sorts of step up screen type of threes. And I think that may get Ayton a little more involved. And, you know, to your point about Ayton, like, you don't want him to be sort of short rolling and making a play. That's sort of not where he's best. But what you can do is you can put Jay Crowder or Torrey Craig or whoever's playing the four in those actions, use him kind of like a Draymond, and have Ayton kind of roaming the baseline, coming from the corner. And so he then makes the next play so that he can kind of be moving when he attacks or shoots and does it quickly without needing to dribble a lot. I mean, you talk about Nick Vucevic. Yeah, his handle's a lot better now. Was it that great 4 years ago?
No.
But he was still quite an effective player for all the same reasons. I see no reason why Ayton couldn't be that.
Sure. No, that's fair. To the Booker point, I think you're totally right that he probably should be taking more of those. It's something we've all kind of been waiting for here in Phoenix for a while. He has one season in his career where he's over 35% on pull-up threes. And I know that's a high bar. You know, those shots are less efficient, but the elite guys are even considerably higher than that, right? So Booker had 2017-18. He was at 36.4%. This year, 30.9. 2018-19, he was down below 30. Like, it's just never really happened for him. And I think that his, you know, way of being efficient seems, the comfort for him seems to be avoiding those shots. And like you said, it's gone down as the team has gotten better, and it's less a part of the way he plays now. So maybe, you know, in the playoffs, they're going to have to change that game plan and ask him to do a little bit more there. But it puzzles me. I don't exactly know what to make of whether we can rely on him to be that. I don't know if you have any more thoughts. Like, it's hard to just tell. Like, can he just turn on a thing that he's never really done? I mean, maybe, but I just find myself watching him lately, and it's to your point, like, he scored 34 in that Warriors game, and I don't think he was all that great offensively. Like, turned the ball over in key moments and was just working so, so hard. Yes, he can make those shots, but can we envision him doing that, you know, every night for three rounds? Like, oof, he's going to get beaten up.
Well, I mean, if the Suns want to go anywhere, isn't that kind of the player he's got to be?
Like, but I think, like you're saying, a way to make him life a little bit easier on himself is if he did have that diversification in his offense, where he can pull up a little bit and do some of that, space the floor a little better and bend the defense around. It's just like you said, it's the pulling out and then kind of driving with his head down. And he can pass out of that. He can get to the mid. He can get to the basket. He has the floater a little bit. But I don't know. It seems unnecessarily difficult, I guess. And it seems like he's doing it to himself a little bit.
So it's interesting. I mean, obviously the percentages are bad. There's nothing really in his shot motion that suggests that he can't do it, right?
Agreed.
If he's rising up for that shot, that still scares the defense, right?
Sure.
I think that's fair to say. So to me, it's more of a mental thing. He's got to be encouraged and willing and confident to be able to take those shots. And maybe this, it's funny, like, the Suns are second in the West, and this will sound like an insult, but I don't think they're the second best team in the West. And I think they're probably more like the fifth best team in the West, but they've had a clean bill of health. And so they, and other teams have not. So they've kind of got this record that makes them appear to be further along than they are. You know, if I told you that the Suns were the finished fifth this year, with, you would probably be just fine with
them. my kind of high bar for them was avoiding the play-in and getting six. So yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I think that's where we all were. But I actually want to hold you there, because it sounds like you think the next team we're going to talk about is better than the Suns. So I want to talk about them. That would be the Utah Jazz. We'll get to them right after another quick break. Today's show is also brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Coming to you one day before the start of the WNBA season, and BetOnline has you covered there as well. They don't quite have championship odds. They're playing things close to the vest here as we wait to see what this thing looks like, the first post-bubble season in the WNBA. But I have a bet for you. It's game night. It's Friday night. The Phoenix Mercury, our local WNBA team here, is on the road in Minnesota on Friday night, and they are giving 2 points. They are the underdogs. 2.5 points is the spread. But what I don't understand, you can see there's a lot of action on that Mercury line. So the money line is actually Mercury minus 125. I recommend hitting the spread there. I don't I don't think that the Minnesota Lynx will even win this game. I think the Mercury we saw last year, they came out and beat the Lynx in the playoffs in a one single elimination game. So I don't think that's a good matchup for Minnesota. I think the Mercury would be ready for this game. So head to betonline.ag, see that and many, many more bets across the spectrum of sports. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, guys. This is your chance to get in on the action as teams prep for their run to the postseason. Head to the website or use your mobile device, make an account, and when you make your first deposit at BetOnline, use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus straight to your account. Again, make a new account on the website or mobile app. Use the promo code LOCKEDON when you put that first deposit into your account and get a 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, closing out the show talking Suns Jazz, how these teams match up. It would probably at this point be a conference finals matchup, would be a very unexpected conference finals matchup, I think.
I'd take it. Fine by me. I think it'd be a great series.
Okay, so before the break you said that you kind of think of the Suns as maybe more in the middle of the West, which seems to me like you would have the Jazz ahead of them. Is that true?
Yeah, I would probably have the Jazz in a similar spot. Okay. Maybe I think I like the Jazz as a team better on the aggregate. Yes. But I mean, both of these teams the Jazz have been less healthy recently, but both of these teams have by and large been healthier during a year when nobody's healthy. So I think it's important to have some perspective about their seeding. I mean, I was thinking about that point in the context of Booker mostly, and that this will be his first postseason, the first time when the comfort of his playing his game, he's going to need to learn to expand it when teams are going to need to get to know what is coming. And so that's where the poll that was connecting the poll three
sure.
point.
No, that might be an interesting question though. I didn't mean to cut you off, but do you see in the context of what we could expect in this year's playoffs, considering what you just said about Booker, it is the first time he'll really face this type of thing. Compared to Donovan Mitchell, who has actually proven himself a little bit more, who do you kind of trust more in that type of a context? Late in game, you know, handling the bulk of an offense, creating great shots, you know, in the last 5 minutes of a game?
Well, I think I would trust Donovan Mitchell, but you also have to remember that the Suns have a guy named Chris Paul who does that stuff pretty well too.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be all on Booker, you know, in that respect, where it doesn't necessarily have to be all on Mitchell either, but it is more on Mitchell. I think the Jazz matchup would be really interesting because the Jazz, I mean, we talked about spread it out teams versus bang it in teams and how the Suns are kind of built to sort of be a foil to those spread them out teams. The Jazz are very much a spread them out team. And so from that respect, the Suns have an advantage. Plus, if Chris Paul is a kind of great operator in the pick and roll against Gobert, but the Suns do not have the Steph Curry who really makes Rudy stretch out, nor do they really have like the Clippers do where they can go small and make, I mean, I don't think the Jazz should be doing this, but convince the Jazz to put Gobert on like Josh Okogie from Minnesota or Pat Beverly, because you don't want to put him on your five man. Like the Suns don't really have that capability. So I had kind of in my head, I don't think that's a great matchup for them. Like I kind of think the Clippers might be a better matchup for them, weirdly, because I think the Clippers do more on the perimeter. They don't use their physicality, whereas the Jazz, you know, Gobert is going to the rim all the time. They're driving, they're kicking. Mitchell is attacking you head on no matter what. And then defensively, I think the Suns have a better chance of scoring on the Clippers than going against Gobert. But it's an interesting question.
The Suns did beat the Jazz all three times this year, and they were healthy for
two
of those. Yeah.
They did. One of those was the game before the Clippers game, and I remember thinking, man, the Suns are really hot and the Jazz are not. Yeah,
they had a lot of success switching on Mitchell in that game. I know he still went off, but it was mostly in that fourth quarter and overtime that he got a lot of his points, just, you know, making pull-up threes, unreal shots. I think he had a four-point play in one moment. But they did have a lot of success doing that. They did have some success, like you said, playing with Gobert in the pick and roll a little bit. I don't really think that's a super trustworthy thing. I mean, a lot of it to me, and this might be a really basic way to say it, but like Paul and Booker want to get to the mid range. And that's in some ways what the Jazz try to give up. Like, I don't know. That seems a little bit more consistent than the Jazz spraying to shooters off of a drive and kick. And then, you know, counting on Mikal Bridges to not be in that guy's face when the ball gets there.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, but of course, then there's a different question to consider there, is that all those mid-range shots would be better as threes, wouldn't they?
Yeah. No, they were.
Yeah, like Gobert doesn't have to come out as much. Like, this is why I think, I mean, this is true for the Clippers matchup and Ayton, but I think it's almost even more true for the Jazz matchup if it happens. You know, Devin Booker does at some point need to embrace the pull-up three-pointer in a way that he has not yet. And that's the next step. And the fact that he hasn't shot it well in the past, to me, from a developmental standpoint, it's understandable in the regular season to say, okay, I'm going to start dishing that shot, or I'm going to build my team around his strengths. And that's all well and good. I think if the Suns are going to get anywhere in the playoffs, you know, he's got to become the, oh shit, he's coming off a screen, we cannot give him a look player.
And that circles back to the question I asked you at the top of this segment, which was between Booker and Mitchell, the player that you maybe trust. And I know you mentioned Chris Paul, of course, but I think the reason Mitchell maybe could have an edge there, and the way he's been able to show out in so many playoff games already in his young career, is he can make that shot, right? And he's pretty good at it. And mm-hmm. And that's, like I said, what he did to the Suns to get that first game, or I guess it was the second game they played, into overtime and actually make it tight. So I think you're right. I think that would definitely pose a challenge. I would be so happy. Mike, I had a reader, actually. I took a full-time job where I don't write as much about this team as I used to, but early mm-hmm. in the season, I wrote something that I guess I didn't realize, but had become an annual piece that I wrote, which was kind of, is Devin Booker the elite shooter we think of him as? And I had a reader send all of those stories that I had written basically once a year for his entire career, or at least since he became a real, you know, budding star in the league, and kind of laugh at me like, you do this every single season with new numbers. And so I would love if the result, whether they make it to the second or third round or not, or how the series go, if the learning lesson coming out of this thing was Devin Booker needs to embrace that shot, and he spends the offseason working on it and getting that confidence, and Monty builds that into the structure of how the offense can function, that would be an awesome result. But I think you're right that it might take this playoffs for them to really learn that lesson, because I think we've seen Booker, like you said, take less of those. He really only does it in transition. He'll do it as sort of like a 2-for-1 thing, or, you know, a change of pace. Let me just get this shot off to keep the defense respecting me in these situations. But it's not a legitimate part of his pick and roll game really at all anymore. So I'm sure we'll see more of it. I don't know if it'll be great. And I think it might have to be that we see a few poor games from Booker for him to really like let that sink in.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, it's less the effectiveness and more the willingness that is. I mean, I always think of Booker like Bradley Beal, who I watch every one of his games as a Wizards fan. And both those guys are sort of seen as shooters, but they really aren't shooters. You know, their percentages are not reflective of that. You know, they are both downhill physical attackers. You know, Beal has more shake to his game. Devin's a little more direct.
He's quicker than Book. Yeah.
I think it's more side to side quickness. Like he'll, mm-hmm. Brad is more likely to shake you, like kind of cross you between the legs and then sort of drop you and spin back. Mm-hmm. Booker is a much more direct, like I'm attacking and I'm going to go through you type of player. Mm-hmm. But they are very similar players, and Beal, you know, Beal takes a lot of threes off screens and off the dribble, and his percentages are okay. They're not what they would think, but he demonstrates that threat. And I think that's the next step for Booker, not necessarily to make them all, but because the stretch that he provides, and some of it is also related to how the Suns team is set up, right? They kind of are set up where they don't generate as much natural spacing because they're playing Aiden a lot. They're playing a lot of those kind of big physical wings that are kind of hot and cold three-point shooters, like a Torrey Craig, like a Jay Crowder, those types of players. So Booker being able to do that will stretch the defense out more, even if he's not making as many shots. And, you know, it'll be an interesting illustration of how the two seasons are different, where in the regular season, to maintain the way the Suns play, Booker has had a really effective 2 years, even if maybe his efficiency numbers are down. But now in the playoffs, you want him to sort of have a little bit of that sort of fear factor that he puts into the head of the opponent, that, oh shit, we can't leave him open. The only way you're going to get that, oh shit, we can't leave him open, is for him to actually shoot it.
Yep. No, I think you're right. I'm excited to see it. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, his mentality and his style of play is really made for the playoffs. But I think in that one specific skill that we've just seen the modern game demand out of playoff creators, it's going to be fascinating to see whether he can rise to that, whether he can incorporate it, or again, whether it takes a little bit of a disappointment, whether it's, you know, a bad loss or a series loss or just some poor games. We'll see. But I'm really interested. You've given us a lot to chew on. You made the Booker shooting point much more eloquently than I can, Mike. So yeah. I appreciate you coming on for that and for talking Suns with us.
Yeah. One last thought I want to appreciate you having me on. One last thought I want to have it, because, and here is that for Phoenix, I think that so much of what will determine success or failure for them is just how quickly they're shifting between their actions. You know, Booker pulling the ball out is in some way a reflection of some of these other players kind of standing around or not reacting quickly enough. And this is sort of the one fly in the ointment to the Chris Paul experience, can be that his teams can be kind of grinded out, sticky. The Suns have done a really good job in really creative ways during the regular season of not getting sticky a lot. I think their transition play has been great. Bridges, I think, is a super, super important player to that. And I actually wonder if, you know, this is maybe a larger thought, but I wonder if maybe they should have teased more out of Bridges with his own ball handling. I think he's capable of more shot creation than he's shown, but he hasn't really shown it enough. You know, and maybe that would help, again, just to add a little bit more flow between actions. That, to me, is going to determine their success. If they play a team that makes it really hard to have that flow, like I think the Lakers are a really good example. That's also why I think the Clippers are a matchup they can handle, because the Clippers' defense is a little bit more reactive, I think, than it is proactive. Whereas someone like the Lakers, Utah is an interesting challenge, but, you know, that would be tough. They have to make Booker's life easier by sort of continuing that flow so that he's not literally dribbling five times before he pulls up. Like, maybe he's taking a handoff, cutting one way, getting the ball to dribble, pull up. Yeah. That, I think, is much more realistic. And that is like going to determine their success or failure in this playoff run, no matter who they play. The ball sticks. It is not always the fault of the ball handlers. It sometimes is the fault and the bug in the setup of their team. They've got to find a way for the flow to keep moving. They've got to make quick decisions. And that will be interesting to see how they do that.
One last final test against the Blazers before a couple against the Spurs, folks. I will be with you post-game right after Portland on Thursday night, so be on the lookout there. Thanks to Mike for joining us. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him at the Prada's Pictures newsletter, the Limited Upside podcast, still churning out NBA content. And
not a whole lot right now.
Hey.
I'm working on a book, for those who don't know. That's why I've been pretty quiet. I'm working on a book about
it. I didn't want to put pressure on you. I didn't want to say, oh, you know, this book, and then bring it up to you and whatever. But we're all very much awaiting it. It's coming out, what, later this year, early next year?
No, next spring. I still got a ways to go. It's a basic. Okay. The idea is like kind of a guide to how the NBA has changed and how to watch it better and kind of more smartly. So yeah, I'm still working through it. I mean, it's sort of been an interesting challenge, but I like to think of it as like a lot of the things I tend to write about are now kind of need to be described in general form rather than specific examples.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be cool. It's very much a big bite to chew on your part, but I am looking forward to it. All right, guys, enjoy your Thursday. We will be back again right after that Blazers game.